Hey, Drew.
Hello, John.
So now that we're going on hiatus, I have an idea for another podcast that you and I can do.
Okay.
I guess you could call it like the anti-archive. So instead of getting together and talking about a topic,
yeah,
on this podcast, we're going to get together and not talk about a topic.
All right.
Sound good?
Yeah.
Let's start right now. Our first topic. I'm John.
And I'm Drew.
And you're listening to The Ourchive,
our ever-growing library of everything, 1 hour at a time. We've talked about concept albums.
Yeah, we have.
But we even talked about concept bands.
There comes a time in your life, in everyone's life, where...
There comes a time in every man's life where decisions have to be made. Whether to toil, to labor, or just plain. Something days away. 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 Got a funny feeling that my time's been put in a jar.
This is going to be a punchy episode.
That's a Dropkick Murphys song.
There comes a time project?
In every minute. I don't know. Huh. I don't know.
I wouldn't be surprised if some of those guys were in some other band.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know what? Probably they're in like one of those fiddle bands like Mumford and Sons or, you know.
Fiddle bands.
Fiddle bands. That's a whole other episode right there.
It's a new genre.
Fiddle bands. Yeah.
Who's in those? Mumford and Sons, Fleet Foxes,
Magnetic Zeros. Do they have fiddles?
I've never heard of them.
Edward Sharpe and the Magnetic
Edward
Zeros.
Edward Scissorhands and the Magnetic Zeros.
The Magnetic Scissorhands.
I think we would categorize a side project as an effort, a musical effort by an already established, musical artist.
Yes, a diversion. A diversion
from their primary musical endeavors.
Yes.
And concept bands, which are sometimes side projects in and of themselves, are, how would you describe that?
Like, well,
there's a narrative or a...
I think it's where when you have a side project that goes beyond just creating music. Like there's some sort of thematic artifice there that they're going for or something.
Whether it be in the personas of the band members or the the themes of the music.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I think here's maybe the difference. I don't know this for sure, but I'm gonna throw this out there. We'll talk and then we'll see if we're right, if I'm right.
Okay.
A side project comes about because somebody or somebodies are writing songs and they don't fit into
you mean
the
like friends, some friends.
Some
you
friends.
Say some buddies.
Some buddies. Some buddies. Buddies.
Hey.
Yeah. They're writing music and it doesn't fit their normal shtick, right? It's not their type of music, right?
Yeah,
but it's still
it wouldn't make
play.
Sense to put into in the context of their already established.
Yes. The thing. Following for those bands would not necessarily be interested in that, or so they think, right? So the side project comes about as a result of that.
To
do something with those songs.
Satisfy that urge.
Yeah. Whereas a concept band starts about, I think it's more of a calculated creation where maybe the music has not necessarily been written, but there is a desire to pursue an idea, and the music is created in order to reach that end.
Yeah,
maybe that's my theory, my hypothesis.
But I don't think concept bands are always side projects. Sometimes they're just the first thing.
True. Okay, that's fair.
But I still think it's what you said. In as much as there's a lot of thought and creation going into that, you know, not just in terms of writing and writing the music, mm-hmm. but like coming up with a theme for the entire bundle, you know, like mm-hmm. the musicians, the personas, the narrative around the band. Mm-hmm. Just see, because a lot of times it's about these groups taking on different different styles of music, but not wanting to have it associated necessarily with the brand of the, you know, existing
right
band,
right
right
yeah.
So that would be my. That would be my take on that.
Okay. Okay. I agree with that. Now, we should say also up front that this is not going to be a comprehensive assessment of either of these. Mm-mm. So you can put your pencils away.
No, keep
your pencils out. No.
But just don't hold it against us.
Right. We will probably fail to acknowledge many, many examples.
We sort of collected a list beforehand of ones that we know of. And, you know, I think it's skewed in a pretty heavily in one direction because of our...
Yeah, our mutual interest in one particular area.
But we tried to hit some other genres, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. But those genres, we're not necessarily going to be able to speak with authority on them. Right? With a whole lot of knowledge about...
Maybe not. There will be gaps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There will be gaps. Don't get... Get off our backs. There will be gaps. That's going to be our new tagline.
But let us know what gaps. If you think there's an interesting gap, you should let us know. And we'll talk about it.
If you actually...
We might like listening to those gaps.
I would love to see in the comments, you know, let us know like what your favorite side project.
That's a good... Oh, another poll. Yeah.
Is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
we had a poll, we had our answers to our last poll, so here's the next one.
You might get some responses
in the comments, either on the website or on Facebook, or you can tweet us.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know your favorite concept band or side project,
or both if you are that type of person.
Yeah. Okay. You had a starting point that's gonna blow us all away.
It is. I think it's gonna break type.
Yeah. All right.
So my introduction to this whole. Concept band, side project, super group genre was Temple of the Dog.
Temple of the Dog.
Temple of the Dog was...
I don't know that one.
It was a one-off. It was like a tribute album to the guy from Mother Love Bone, which was a Seattle band, right around the same time that like Alice in Chains... and Soundgarden and all the sort of big grunge names were forming or, you know, were starting out before they got big. Mother Love Bone existed. And I think it was the singer, and I can't remember his name. He passed away. Chris Cornell from Soundgarden, I think, is the one who sort of led this charge of getting all these bands together to create this tribute album, right?
Yeah.
And a tribute band, I guess.
When was the...
This is like 91, 92? 91, I think. Was maybe when this got started.
Yeah.
So it's right. It's happening right as all of those bands are starting to get noticed anyway.
Yeah.
But it was. I don't know if this was done. And I just read a book about the Seattle scene. I can't remember. I feel like this was actually already underway before like Nevermind got big and before Soundgarden got big. Mm-hmm. It was probably a little bit after Alice in Chains was first established.
Okay.
But. It came out probably in 92 maybe or something. And so it looked almost like it was like as if all of these bands that you were just getting to know that were just starting to get big, it was like all of a sudden then they created this combo project. So it was like mind-blowing because like I turn on MTV and I see the guy from Soundgarden singing, and I'm like, oh, it must be a new Soundgarden song, right?
Okay.
And so I'm watching it, and then all of a sudden, Eddie Vedder comes in, and I'm like, that's the guy from Pearl Jam. Wait a minute, is this a Soundgarden song, or is this a Pearl Jam song? Yeah. What is this, you know? And I'm watching, and I'm like, what? And then I see the end, and it's like, Temple of the Dog. And I'm like, who's Temple of the Dog?
Wow.
What the hell is happening? Yeah, it was totally threw me off my rocker. I didn't know what was going on.
That's the perfect name for that kind of band.
Temple of the Dog.
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. But.
Well, but like it's perfect for the genre.
Sure.
You know?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It sounds just like what a grunge band would call
right,
themselves.
Yeah. If they were up-and-coming grunge band, yeah.
Ooh, Temple of the Dog.
Yeah, so that was my introduction. That's how I got to know this whole thing. And from then on, I mean, that obviously was not the first one.
That was
my first inkling of that happening. And
that, of course, was not the first one ever.
Do you know what the first one ever was?
No. What do I look like? I was trying to think of what my first introduction to this idea was, mm-hmm. the side project. Embarrassingly, it might be Chris Gaines.
I honestly didn't know about until you brought him up.
Are you really?
Yeah, I had never heard any of this.
He's from Australia. Chris Gaines was the alter ego of Garth Brooks.
Say that again. Just say it again.
Chris Gaines was the alter ego of Garth Brooks. I think at the time, you know, I hadn't really, wasn't into music yet, you know. It's probably not my first exposure to this idea, but it's the first time I knew, like, what this was, mm-hmm. right? This alter ego idea, this right. concept band or artist, maybe you'd call it, because it's just the one guy. And, you know, I don't think I ever heard a Chris Gaines song. I mean, I probably have, but I couldn't summon one up for you. I mean, I could think of like two Garth Brooks songs.
That's good.
But
that's...
Chris Gaines, you know, I couldn't. But I remember being somewhat incredulous because Chris Gaines was, I feel like the marketing around it, there was never any admission by Garth Brooks that, you know, he was Chris Gaines.
He didn't acknowledge it at all?
I don't think so. At least not at the time.
Right, while it was happening.
And the great thing was that Chris Gaines was made up to look much younger than Garth Brooks. And like he had, in fact, you know, he kind of had an emo haircut before that.
Yeah, I was looking at pictures of him. And
I think he had a lip ring.
So this was actually Garth Brooks.
Yes, yeah, it like was Garth Brooks.
Like the person, the image of Chris Gaines is actually
Garth him
Brooks.
In makeup and...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And a wig.
I mean, it's convincing. I didn't recognize him.
I'm pretty sure it's him.
Huh.
And it was just really strange because I didn't understand... Who was he trying to fool?
Right.
Was what sort of blew my mind, you know? but that's, you know, that happens, I think, fairly frequently. Like an existing, hugely popular artist will kind of take on a different persona to explore different avenues of music. Now, I think that Chris Gaines was still like country.
Right.
Like country, pop country. I don't think he deviated far from the Garth Brooks oeuvre.
Interesting. That's weird. I could see him doing it if he wanted to get into like something, you know,
grunge.
Hip hop. Yeah.
Ziggy played guitar, jamming good with Webb and Gilly and the Spiders from Mars. He played it left hand, but made it too far. Became the special man, then we were Ziggy's band.
That, you know, it made me, it reminded me only tangentially. Is that a word?
Yeah.
Of Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I guess the difference being maybe that I don't. Bowie wasn't really established. I think when
oh,
he
was
did
he not?
Ziggy. I mean, he was he'd been around, but he wasn't like a superstar. I don't think. I think Ziggy is what sort of brought him to prominence.
Oh,
and that's my perception. I could
was
be wrong,
that?
But
and I don't know if you know much about it, but was that at the time was he like, you know, Ziggy Stardust is a different guy. Like, that's not me. I'm David Bowie.
I think he wasn't living as Ziggy Stardust, but he was performing as
right.
Ziggy Stardust.
But he,
so,
would he perform David Bowie songs as Ziggy Stardust?
No.
That's right. Okay.
No.
That's what I thought.
It was Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars.
Yeah.
And they would play their songs.
Yeah.
Like from that album.
It's an awesome name.
Oh, it's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And his look was incredible, too.
It was.
He really.
The other one that I think of, and I've only learned about this very recently. I don't know if it really fits totally, completely.
Mm-hmm.
But Beyonce, the recording artist, I guess a few years ago, put out an album. It was a double album called I Am Sasha Fierce.
Mm-hmm.
And one album was called I Am Ellipses, and the other album's called Sasha Fierce.
Hmm.
And I was reading up about it, and, you know, the idea was she wanted to, like, really push herself creatively. And I think the I Am album is maybe more in line with the stuff she usually does.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Sasha Fierce, I think was where she kind of tried to experiment more with, I think that in the article it said Europop or electronica style stuff.
Interesting.
And I've listened to it before, and I wish I had read that prior to, so I could kind of like have that in my head.
Yeah.
It's because I honestly couldn't tell you if she achieved it or not. Now, in the same article, it says that a lot of people had trouble discerning a clear theme from either album, that they didn't feel distinct enough from one another.
Huh.
But she did create this persona. This Sasha Fierce is her persona to, I guess, explore these different kind of sounds.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like kind of a trying to serve both outlets, you know? So, like, she gets one album out there that's more in line with the stuff that people are expecting from her.
Yeah.
And then she also has, hey, there's this other stuff I want to do.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll like it.
And I think it's not even, I don't think it's even her most successful album, like, in terms of Billboard or whatever.
Right.
But I'm pretty sure it has, like, some of her biggest singles on it, which is interesting. So, let's stay in the land of the unknown, you know, as far as we're concerned, and sort of stuff we don't know a whole lot about. And let's talk about one of the first, not one. Okay, I can't claim anything's the first because I know someone goes, it's not the first. Here's the first. Maybe I'll say this is an early side project in the genre of rock.
Okay.
And perhaps one of the most well-known, if not by the name, then certainly by the collection of artists. And that is the Traveling Wilburys.
Tell me about the Traveling Wilburys.
This was a side project where I have to think, like, the dudes in this band were like, we're all really good. Mm-hmm. Like, we're all really well-known. We all are making, you know, top hits.
Mm-hmm.
How awesome would it be to make music together and then put that out? Like, what would we come up with, you know, together? Mm-hmm. And so if you don't know, the members of the Traveling Wilburys are George Harrison of the Beatles.
Okay.
Bob Dylan of Bob Dylan.
Right.
Jeff Lynne.
Of Bob Dylan.
Well. Jeff Lynne of Electric Light Orchestra. Uh-huh. He's a wild card. He's my favorite.
X Factor. Dark Horse.
Yeah. Roy Orbison of Orbison. Tom Petty. Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. I think that's it. I think I got them all. Didn't I?
I think so.
You know, and it's funny because those are all huge superstars in the world of music, right?
Right.
I think maybe people know Jeff Lynne a little less.
Yeah.
But that dude's kind of crazy in terms of his musical skill.
Probably pretty well known among musicians.
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe he would be your large, musician's musician, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Right. And so I have to think, like, when news of this broke, people are like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And
when was this exactly?
Was it the 80s? 70s? Maybe. 70s or 80s? Let me see if I can find out. People must have been like, oh, my God, what are they going to make? Like, this group of people? And I can't think of a single song I've ever heard by them. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't think of any instance where people, like...
They didn't really penetrate the mainstream in the way that they had independently done.
I don't think they did. Yeah. I think the idea of it was probably more impressive than the actual result.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
My dad would probably disagree wholeheartedly with me because I'm sure he can list several songs by the Traveling Wilburys. So, late 80s, 1988.
Wow, I didn't realize it was that late.
And they were together from 88 to 1990. And I wonder if they were together up until Roy Orbison's death. But I wonder if they're one of the first instances of a supergroup.
Yeah, potentially.
And a supergroup being a side project consisting of
established
names, right?
Yeah.
So what's the one? I think it's the Rage Against the Machine members, but with a different singer.
Oh,
is that Audioslave?
Yeah, might be.
That's another name of a band that totally fits, like
Audioslave. Yeah,
like straight from the 90s.
Like, how did that work? How did that not get laughed off?
Chris Cornell, Tom Morella, Tim Comerford, and Brad Wilk.
Hmm.
So that would be Chris Cornell.
Chris Cornell, again with the names, yeah, man. Spot on.
He likes to bring the supergroups together, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone was from Rage Against the Machine except for Chris Cornell.
Interesting.
So they got together and like people flipped out, I bet. I guess if you're into Audioslave, awful name.
That's your thing.
That's a truly terrible band name.
Yeah, see that. That's
do you get
thing.
It though?
They never.
Do
really,
you get it?
What, Audioslave?
Yeah. Do you get what it means?
No.
They're slaves to audio.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
Thanks.
the band members are.
Uh huh.
They're and by slaves to audio, what it really means slaves to their music.
Yeah.
In case you didn't pick that up. I just thought you should be made aware of that.
It's a thing. It's kind of a trend. Like, you don't really ever see any of these side projects or supergroups ever equaling or surpassing the success of the original project, you know, or the
Why
core band. I don't know. I guess it's because they're always judged in comparison to those other stuff.
I think there's
also
huge expectations.
Yeah. Yeah. You're never they're not allowed to establish themselves organically the way that like a regular quote unquote band
is would Velvet Revolver.
Yeah, I would say that.
Who's that?
That's basically Guns N' Roses with Scott Weiland from Stone Temple Pilots. And in fact, like, I mean, I used to think about this all the time. When I heard that this was happening, I was like, oh, okay, sure, whatever. You know, yeah. That's probably not going to work.
No.
And then I heard their first song, and which was Slither,
yeah.
I think.
Did you have a glimmer of hope?
I did, because yeah. I thought it was a pretty good song.
All right.
As you know, pretty as glossy rock songs go, mm-hmm. it was pretty good. And Scott Weiland actually did a pretty good kind of serpentine voice.
Well, and you've watched that video. There's a music video where
man,
he's
yeah.
slithering all over the place.
He's basically doing an axel.
He's a snake.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a snake.
So I thought, okay, maybe there's some hope for this, you know? But I kept thinking, like, how do you take a band seriously when their name is Velvet Revolver?
Yeah.
How?
I feel like that's another example of a band name that's like straight out of, like, these guys never left the 90s.
Yeah, yeah.
What's a good name for our band?
Velvet Revolver.
Tipple the dog.
Yeah.
We worship a dog. Velvet Revolver. Let me explain it.
Sexy guns.
Hang on. Shut up, Slash. I'll explain it to you.
When you seek me, you'll destroy me. Smell the poppies, born in blood in every single time. Always keep me under finger. That's the spot where you might linger. I see some type of pleasure in my mind. Here comes the water. Here comes to wash.
You know, Temple of the Dog, there's another dog side project that I know nothing about.
Oh.
Other than
one
band member who we all know and love. And this is a side project of a different sort, because the artist's usual milieu is in the world of cinema. Yeah? In the world of film.
Yeah.
Yeah? And
somehow it sounds so wrong to equate him with the word cinema. I don't know. It just doesn't seem.
You got a lot of
hate
for this guy.
I don't. I think this guy's great.
I don't know why. I think he's a great. He seems like a genuinely awesome person.
He does. He does.
Keanu Reeves is in a band called Dogstar.
Yeah.
Is it with his brother?
You might be thinking of Kevin Bacon.
I am. Yeah. Keanu Reeves is in a band called Dogstar.
I have never listened to Dogstar, but I have a story about Dogstar that I can.
He plays bass, right?
I think so. He plays something.
He lays low.
Yeah,
he lays.
Well, it's not like they're not advertised as Keanu Reeves.
No.
Dogstar.
But that's his style, man.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what he plays, but
you got a story.
I got a story. This is hearsay. I should throw that out there right now. It's hearsay.
Okay.
I can't verify this, but I used to work with somebody who was at a time a photographer for Dogstar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know what that means. I don't know if that meant that she was on tour with them for a particular tour taking photos, mm-hmm. Or if she was like she was working for like a PR company or whatnot, and she was taking photos. I don't know. But anyway, she was a photographer, and her subject was Dogstar, right?
Okay.
So apparently one night at the Viper Room, which is a club on Sunset Boulevard.
Okay.
And it is most infamous as the place where River Phoenix died.
Oh.
Yeah, kind of a bummer. But she was hanging out with Dogstar. I don't think they were playing there that night. I think they were just hanging out.
Okay.
And she is actually sitting at the bar next to Keanu Reeves.
Uh-huh.
And now I don't know I can't remember the specifics. It's been probably 10 years since she told me this story. But either someone came up and to her or came up to them and threw up onto Keanu Reeves' back and down his shirt.
Yeah.
Or Keanu Reeves turned to her and threw up down her back.
Okay.
Either way, it's a great story.
Yeah.
And is the first thing that I think about whenever anybody says Keanu Reeves.
We got to get confirmation on what happened.
Do you still have ties with this
person? Let's see if we can find out, because
it's a great story.
You got all sorts of actors doing these kind of things, right? Bruce Willis, famously. plays harmonica.
At Planet Hollywood openings.
For Bruce Willis and the Accelerators. They're a blues band.
Is that what the name of it
is? Yeah, I'm looking at it.
That's
a pretty terrible name.
Oh, who was that guy? What was his name? He was the guy that used to get beat up in every movie. Jared Leto.
Yeah, he's
Jared Leto.
30
he's
Seconds
in a band.
To Mars, a successful one.
Yeah, I think his music career
much surpassed his acting one.
Yeah, well, because he never made it through an entire movie.
Without getting beat up.
Yeah, which was great. Don't get me wrong. I mean,
he did it well.
Giving the audience what you want to see. That's
he was in the classic cult television show, My So-Called Life.
Yes. Yeah,
that's where he got his start, yeah?
He was the lusted after boyfriend guy, wasn't he?
And did he get beat up in that show?
I don't think in the show, only in the movies. Where all good things happen.
There's one more diversion. Oh, no, two more diversions to the acting into side project world. There's a pretty great instance of this that happened in the late 80s, I guess around the same time. As the Traveling Wilburys were. I have to think like this was their main competition, probably. Bill Paxton. I don't know if he put out a full album.
Wait. Is this that one? I've seen a video.
Yeah, you've seen it.
Yeah.
The band is called Martini Ranch, which is excellent.
Yeah, it's great.
Already, right? there is a maybe 10-minute long video for a song called what is it called? Let's see if it says here. Maybe it's Reach. Anyway, it's like an epic. And it's Bill Paxton is a cowboy.
It's like a cowboy epic.
A modern cowboy.
A saloon.
Because he has a car and there are motorcycles, right. I think, in the video. And I don't know. Well, why don't we just put the link?
Yeah, let's link
because it's not really easy to describe. But you'll see some of his Aliens co-stars in the movie with him, notably Paul Reiser, and the woman who played Vasquez. I can't think of her name.
Yeah, she's just Vasquez.
I believe. I mean, here it's telling me that James Cameron actually directed one of their videos.
No, I believe it.
Isn't Bill Paxton?
Bill Paxton. It's his alter ego. Yeah. That's James Cameron's alter ego.
And then the last...
Cameron loves... He's a great director, but all he's ever really wanted to do is act. Yeah. Channels himself through Bill Paxton.
The last one is... this one I know of because I remember... somewhere I saw a link to this video where... it was an interview with this band, and the band has a huge actor as one of the members. And like the interviewer, of course, sort of comments on, you know, the fact that he's this huge film star, and but the actor is Russell Crowe.
Oh yeah,
and Russell Crowe pretends like, "What are you talking about? Why would you bring that up? Like it has nothing to do with anything."
Yeah. Because that's the kind of jerk that Russell Crowe is. Yeah.
And I think even in the video, like, he's sort of sitting separate from the rest of the band. And the rest of the band's, like, really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And he's just like, ask me about the music. Ask us about the music. I'm not an actor. We should try to find it. It's pretty great.
That's good. There was other, as we were talking about that, another, like, sort of... cross milieu concept band. Have you ever heard of the Rock Bottom Remainders?
Mm-mm.
It's a bunch of writers who are like established.
Oh yeah.
So the big guys would be Stephen King.
Is he in it?
He's in it.
He plays
guitar and sings. Yes. Yeah. Dave Barry, I think.
Okay. The essayist.
Yeah. Ridley Pearson.
I don't know his.
He and Dave Barry together wrote those Peter Pan sequels, Peter and the Star Chasers, Peter and the something or others. I haven't read them, but and then there's a couple of other people in there. I can't remember exactly who. One of them might be the guy that Stephen King co-wrote that book about the Red Sox on. Nan somebody? I don't know.
No clue.
Anyway, Rock Bottom Remainders, I think they have officially retired.
Oh.
They have played their last
thing.
They
hit rock bottom.
But they were around for like a good 20 years, 15 or 20 years or so. I think they started in like the late 80s, early 90s, and were still occasionally playing shows into the 2000s. But it was like a charity thing, so... Yeah. They would just get together and play a song to raise money for some sort of cause or whatever. And they didn't. I don't think they wrote any of their own material. So I don't know. Maybe that doesn't quite qualify. Hmm. If you're not actually performing your own original material, I don't know. Maybe you're just a tribute band then.
Yeah. But maybe.
I don't know.
So another cross milieu is, and this will get us a bit closer back to the point, is the Gorillaz.
Yeah.
Because it's made up of Duncan? Damon? Damon? Damon?
Matt Damon?
Matt Damon.
Matt Damon and Ben Affleck were in the Gorillaz?
Damon Albarn, who is of the, who, from, you would know from the blur. From the blur. Damon Albarn, who you would know from Blur.
Yes.
And then.
They of the, woohoo!
Yeah, exactly. And Jamie Hewlett, who you may not know as well. Jamie Hewlett is a comics creator.
Yeah, illustrator.
An illustrator, a writer, an artist. And I think before the Gorillaz came around, he's probably best known for Tank Girl.
Yeah. Oh, man, I didn't realize that was him.
Yeah, so he made Tank Girl. They made a movie. Movie was bad.
I love that movie.
I kind of thought you might.
I love that movie. Spike Lee's a rabbit. That's awesome. Or a kangaroo. I forget. Kangaroo, I think. Not Spike Lee. Ice-T.
Oh, wow.
Let's talk about Tank Girl.
No, we don't have time. Those two got together, and this is more in the not only a side project for both of them, but this is a total embodiment of the idea of a concept band
in so
many ways, because they got together and they sort of put together this whole narrative world around this fictional band, you know, a fictional in as much as the band members are not even people. They're not even real people. They're cartoons. They're, you know, Jamie Hewlett designed, I'm sure with input from Damon, Armand or whatever his name was.
Matt Damon.
You know, design these characters, and I can never determine if there's actually four or three members.
But they are consistent, right? Like it's
Yeah.
The embodiment of the band is depicted consistently.
Yes, yeah. And others have told me, given me sort of the lowdown on these characters, and they all have like fully fleshed out personas and stuff, and they're, I think they're all kind of insane, as it were. But I absolutely love the design of these characters. They look so cool. I like his style.
Yeah,
Jamie Hewlett's.
It became pretty influential. Like there's a lot of later character designs that you can see that definitely draw their influence from those.
So the band. Their videos, it's just really cool that the amount of effort that goes into this, because in the, you know, the music videos, it's you know, either cartoons so that they can have the characters. At this point, they're doing computer animated renderings of them. And in fact, there's one video that features Bruce Willis.
No.
Yeah. He's chasing the gorillas in a car.
Oh, is he playing harmonica?
No.
No.
It's a pretty cool video too. Their videos are great.
Yeah.
I can't get into the music. It really bums me out because I can't. There's a few, you know, singles here and there that I can listen to and enjoy, but as a whole, I give it a chance. Every once in a while, I'll listen to their albums, and I just can't
Was that albums with a Z? Because it's Gorillaz with a Z. Yeah.
But the coolest thing about them is that they tour. The band,
they
the Gorillaz,
as
tour.
The Gorillaz. Yeah.
And in one of the tours, I don't know if they've always done this, but I think in at least one of their tours, they had this setup where they basically had these huge panes of glass that were on the stage. And onto that pane of glass, they projected a 3D rendering of each character.
Oh.
So you had these like life-size representations that looked pretty seamless. There's video of it. You can see video of it online. Performing the music. It's such a cool...
But like the backdrop was there. It wasn't like just... It wasn't totally an animated thing.
No, no.
It was
like they a just, stage.
And they're actually walking
it's just
around
them
on
walking
the stage.
Around on stage.
That's awesome.
It's very cool.
What a great idea.
Yeah, I would love to see that. You know, yeah. even if I wasn't into the music, it would just be such a neat thing to see done.
Yeah.
And like they must be hugely successful or not even hugely, but successful enough to like pay for that kind of thing. It's gotta cost a lot
of
money.
Yeah, I'm sure that's not a cheap performance.
Yeah. But I couldn't, it really bugs me that I can't get into the music. Because I love the look of it so much. The whole idea around it is so cool to me. So if you want to turn off the podcast now, you can. You may be, because this is going to get pretty heavy into.
Here's where we nerd out.
Actually, before we jump in, I wanted to note, you know, I actually was trying to think of, and I couldn't, of some bands within hip hop, some groups that,
oh,
that
right.
you know, either super groups. Oh, maybe, you know, the one that might fit, and I honestly don't know much enough about them, but Wu-Tang Clan,
right.
to me, always struck me as sort of that idea of a concept group because they all come up with, you know, names within that idea, right? Of sort of kung fu,
right,
hip hop. And RZA, who I think is the main dude.
Is it RZA or is it the RZA?
I think they pronounce it RZA.
Huh.
You know, he recently did he direct?
Yeah, he just directed a kung fu movie.
Yeah. Which is awesome. I really want to see that.
Yeah, I do too.
Like
the man with the golden arm or something?
Fist, maybe.
Yeah. Golden arms.
Iron fist? Man with the iron fist?
Yeah, maybe.
Iron fist. But I've always, I don't even know if I've ever heard a Wu-Tang song, but I always got the impression that they have sort of a narrative going for what the group is and also sort of the music.
Yeah. I had heard something about like them having an origin story.
Yeah,
or something,
yeah. Oh, I love it when
which
man,
is great.
I love that. I love that.
I love origin stories.
I do. Don't you? But I was trying to also think of like super groups, you know, hip hop super groups. And here's what I came up with, and this may be the problem. It seems like there's an enormous amount of crossover within hip hop, you know, to feature an artist on your album.
Just as like on a song by song basis.
Yeah. So I couldn't, and this is most likely because I know very little about the genre. Couldn't come up with like any super groups or, you know, like a bunch of big names coming together to do an album.
Right.
But I'm sure it's happened, but I would wager that genre is replete with those examples of both kind of concept groups and you know, super groups and side projects. And I think that's because those artists just seem very prolific.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like they're constantly writing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point.
Which takes us into our area of expertise, where, again, you also have a lot of prolific artists, and that is with punk rock and ska. And I feel like we should start with the sort of the primary one that comes to mind for me, and the various tree limbs that diverge from the main trunk. That's Blink-182. Right before their self-titled album, I think this is before the self-titled album, Tom does a side project called Boxcar Racer. And the side project was definitely, in quotes, I'll say edgier than Blink, and much more serious in tone.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was a little less, it was more like Blink songs are pretty straightforward in their content, lyrical content, whereas I think Boxcar Racer is more.
Up to that point,
cerebral.
Blink was much more.
Yeah.
So he does that, and at the time, there seemed to be no like rift caused by that. And then the next album to come out was the self-titled album, which was a pretty big shift from what they had been doing up to that point musically.
Right.
And it was pretty evident that Tom's sort of diversion into Boxcar Racer had influenced this new direction. And then they break up. So Tom goes off and he does a band called Angels and Airwaves.
Which is horrible.
Well, yeah. Well, he touted it. The problem is, so it was really interesting to follow both of these guys and see what they did next, because Tom kept sort of claiming that this next move of his was going to revolutionize music. I mean, he was like, we're changing the world. And Mark was pretty quiet about his stuff.
Yeah.
And then Mark goes off and does a pretty, I don't say this in a insulting way, but a pretty unremarkable sort of straight up pop punk album.
Right.
And the group was called Plus 44. He did that with Travis.
And I've still never heard that album.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty straightforward, which was especially in, you know, if you're a Blink fan and you're like sort of listening out for these two groups, Angels and Airwaves, I think, hit first and was a pretty big disappointment. And then Plus 44 came along, and it wasn't like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
But it was nice that it was just straightforward.
More akin to what you're used to. Yeah.
And then they got back together.
Yeah.
And now they're doing stuff.
Things. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how interesting that actually is for anyone.
They've both.
Apart from us.
I think it's interesting that they had these side projects, right? And they've come back together to form Blink-182, and so or reform Blink-182. And I think the assumption at that point was that, okay, well, that's the end of the side projects, right? Because now they're Blink-182. But it isn't.
Tom is
he's still doing Angels and Airwaves.
Well, you know, and you saying that reminds me that when they did come back together, you know, now they've released one album and one EP, and it just kind of feels like the two bands that they made after separating merged.
Yeah.
It just sort of feels like you combine Angels and Airwaves with Plus 44. Because the styles, there still seems to be a pretty big lack of cohesion.
There's a dissonance between the two of them, I think, that's still evident in the music.
The other one, the other big tree
with
its myriad branches is Green Day. Is that where you're going?
Yeah.
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 Although I don't think that one has as many branches necessarily as it is just...
It has three branches.
Okay. There you're
Doesn't
right.
it? Yeah. No. It has two...
Well, this tree metaphor is getting complicated.
Green Day.
So there's Green Day, right?
Yeah, we all know Green Day.
The three core members of Green Day are for a long time were the core members of Green Day. Are in Green Day throughout the early 90s.
Yeah.
Into the mid 90s
and into the 2000s.
Well, yeah, but the earlier like mid 90s I think is when Billy Joe Armstrong starts tinkering with other groups.
Okay.
Including Pinhead Gunpowder.
Mm-hmm. Pinhead Gunpowder.
Right.
To me is just sort of another band, you know, that he was involved in. And like you said, didn't deviate far from the sound of Green Day. But then, right around the time that they had put out Warning and American Idiot would be the next album, but between those two albums, they recorded another album. Which we talked about this because we talked about concept albums.
Yeah.
They recorded another album called Cigarettes and Valentines.
Right.
Which the demos were stolen. And so they never released it. Now, there's a theory that that album is actually intact and has been released. And it was released by a band called The Network.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a side project concept band.
Mm-hmm.
That consisted of the members of Green Day, I think.
Yeah.
And
Incognito.
Was Jason White part of that?
And Jason White was in Pinhead Gunpowder.
Oh, okay.
Which may have been how that all came together where he started playing with Green Day.
Yeah. So Jason White, who now seems to be an established official fourth member of Green Day, at this point was definitely a touring member.
Yeah.
But not sort of on the liner notes, you know?
Yeah.
If you list the members. So the Network is like a really weird diversion from what Green Day was doing.
They had kind of like a Devo feel to them that they were going for. I've never listened to that album, so
really?
I don't know. Yeah, never.
Oh, I hated it. I remember
I anticipated that I would probably hate it.
I remember being really upset that I didn't like it, you know. But in they never revealed. I think to this day they have not, you know, owned up to the fact that they were the Network, you know, because they wear masks and stuff in the album art and all that. So you have the Network, and then they release American Idiot, and I think between American Idiot and 21st Century Breakdown, you have another side project consisting of all four members of Green Day, called Foxborough Hot Tubs.
And which I did not, up until maybe like last year,
weren't aware of.
I knew of them. I'd heard like their songs, and I recognized that it was probably Billy Joe singing.
Yeah.
But I just thought it was another like Pinhead Gunpowder thing where he like got together with other people. I didn't realize it was the whole band.
The whole band they put out this garage rock basically. Album that was pretty cool. I don't think it's great, but it was a really neat deviation from Green Day.
Yeah.
And I would say is the biggest influence on the most recent three albums that they put out.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Like, you could clearly see an evolution of that approach in the next three albums.
Yeah.
Because it was very garagey.
Yes. Garagey. I'm interested to see if they do another side project now before they release.
Oh, I think they should.
Yeah.
Shouldn't they?
I like to keep that pattern.
Yeah. I just like that it's them.
Yeah.
That it's not like it's one of them went off and did something. Yeah. It's like they want to explore other music, but they want to do it together.
Yeah.
It's kind of heartwarming. Right?
Yeah.
In the world of concept bands, I have a primary favorite, and it is one of my favorite bands in general.
Alison Krauss and
Jimmy
Page.
No.
Audio Slave.
Yeah. Temple of the Dog. No, it's
Matt Damon.
got to be in a band.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
No, it's the Aquabats.
Uh-huh.
Have I talked about the Aquabats on the
show? Yeah, I think we did. We talked about them.
Oh, I think because I was talking about how it's one of the best shows I've ever been to.
Yes.
Yeah. They're awesome because they have an origin story. They have a narrative. They're superheroes.
Do you think that you like the Aquabats so much because of all of the trappings of their concept?
That's where it started.
Okay.
Well, okay, it's a combination of things. I mean, one, the music I really like.
Mm-hmm.
Like, despite, if it was just a group of guys making this music, I'd be,
you'd still be down with
it. I'd still be really into it. The trappings around it are the icing on the cake. The story that goes into it, and plus there's been so many members in that band now that it totally feels like a superhero team where they're swapping out, different
like
heroes.
The Justice League
like the Avengers,
West Coast Avengers.
Exactly. West Coast Aquabats. Well, they are the West Coast Aquabats. East Coast Aquabats is what you need. But they, I also, the music itself is, I think, really uplifting too, which I like, because a lot of the groups I listen to aren't uplifting, and so they're really positive, mm-hmm. and they kind of celebrate that, and they celebrate how sort of goofy they are too.
Yeah.
Now,
fun-loving.
There's recently been a new band that's come around. I don't know how new they are, but I think they're pretty.
They seem pretty recent.
Yeah.
They seem definitely
and I feel like they're like the antithesis, the enemies.
Oh, I right? see where you're going with
like
this.
These
yeah.
could be. I feel like if these two bands toured, you'd have a really cool show. Because the Aquabats in their shows, which I think it described, they fight villains. Like,
yeah.
Villains come up on stage and they fight them.
Yeah.
And what would be better than people acting like villains than actual true villains? So there's a band called Masked Intruders.
Yeah.
And I think they're fairly recent. And they are a pop punk band. And they all wear ski masks.
Yes.
Of different colors.
Color-coded.
Yeah, color-coded ski masks.
Color-coordinated ski masks.
And they play love songs and stuff, but all under the lens of crime.
Yeah.
And I recently, today... read that article you sent me because they just played St. Louis the other day. And apparently, even at their show, they're like talking about how they're going to steal everyone's valuables, at the end of the show and hold people up. And
it's the same type of like shtick,
but it's on the other side of the coin.
It's the opposite.
So,
yeah. It's sort of like tongue in cheek. Yeah, criminals.
To have these two groups go
yes.
up against each other.
Yes.
You know?
That's a perfect tour.
Like, you could have Masked Intruder headline, and at the end of their set, they could be like defeated or whatever, or challenged by the Aquabats.
By the Aquabats.
And then they like get away, and the Aquabats play their set.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That would be amazing.
How does this not happen yet?
I know. They need to talk to each other.
Wow.
The only other one I can think of is Forces of Evil, which is a side project from that Aaron Barrett of Real Big Fish is involved in. And I think I read somewhere that he did that because he felt like ska was kind of dissipating.
Mm.
And that like there wasn't any like sort of like true kind of pure ska going on. And so he I don't know if he started it or became just a part of it or whatever.
Just found him.
Yeah.
There's a truck outside.
Yeah.
A bunch of guys.
But it is, I mean, if you listen to Real Big Fish, you can chart kind of their progression away from ska.
Mm-hmm.
And this was definitely the Forces of Evil is a much more it's ska.
More traditional
ska. Yeah.
There's one other one that came to mind to me too. That was actually two. One in the not so much in the pop punk vein, but definitely in that same arena. Davey Havoc from AFI,
mm-hmm.
which is a hardcore band, was the, I guess you could call founding vocalist of this band called Son of Sam, which is a concept side project for a couple of the members of Samhain, which was the band that Danzig founded, Glenn Danzig founded after the Misfits. This is a weird, very cool channel here. So these guys, they write some songs and they want to play, and they're a little more hardcore punk than what Samhain was. Samhain deviated a little bit from that, but they got Davey Havoc to write the lyrics and be the singer for the first album. I don't know if they toured at all. I think they may have just put out the record.
Yeah.
And then a couple of years ago, that was back in like 2004, and then a couple of years ago, they had some more songs that they'd written. Davey, I guess, he had said something like, you know, no, I did that once, you know, now it's time for somebody else to do it. So they got a different vocalist to write the lyrics and sing on the second album. And both of them are pretty good.
I like that.
Yeah, it's cool. They don't sound like Samhain, but they sound like a logical growth, outgrowth of Samhain, which is what they are. So
sure.
It makes sense.
Huh.
Okay.
All right. Well,
good.
Go listen to all that music.
Yep.
Or don't. And I'm sorry if that last portion of the podcast was super boring.
I'm not sorry.
We'll put the whole thing in the archive.